right, hello and welcome to the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, Albert, and as always, I'm joined by my brother Barney. How are you doing, Barney? How's things?
I'm very good. I'm very excited. It feels good to be back. You know, I've been writing my notes this weekend, which have gone well. I mean, I had an hour-long wait at a hospital waiting room, so, and that's when I started writing my Benfica notes, so I've gone big on that. So we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. But no, I'm just really excited to get back in the swing of things, man. It was good to have football back to watch. Hell of loads of news stories going on. It's just, you know, it's like we've never been away, really.
It's funny because we haven't done a proper podcast in ages since the season ended, and I don't think we could have been given a better opening weekend of the season to come back to, because the amount of stuff that happened was just crazy. As you say, we're gonna get into all of it. We're gonna attempt, as always, to cover the biggest games from the weekend and maybe touch on some of the smaller games as well. For anyone who's new to the show, this is our weekly review show. We're gonna round up all the games from the Premier League this weekend, talk about all the big talking points, and all that good stuff. Before we get stuck into it, though, we should reference our big announcement from during the week. Obviously, people would have heard us teasing it if you listened to our preview shows, perhaps. But we finally shared the news on our social media pages. If you saw that, for anyone who doesn't follow us on social, Barney, do you want to tell everyone what the big news was?
Well, I can't really believe I'm saying it, but we've released our own kit made in collaboration with Lacatone, who make a lot of the kits in Portugal, and in our opinion have made the best kits this season. I'd say it's absolutely beautiful designs. And we were well it's been a long time coming, hasn't it? But this has been in the pipe for a while, and then to finally have it in our hands is really special.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And I should give a big shout out to friend of the show, Christopher Sandberg, who started this ball rolling. I think it was 18 months ago, maybe even close to 2 years ago, when we first got in contact with Lacatone through Chris. He kindly put us in touch with one of his contacts at Lacatone, and they did a design for us. And then we went through the whole process of getting refreshing the logo and getting it manufactured and all this kind of stuff. And it's finally real. We both now have real copies in our possession, plus loads of people have got them as well, who already ordered them. We've had a fantastic response to the shirts. If you haven't seen it already, you can check it out on our Instagram or our Twitter page. There's loads of pictures on there. And of course, if you want to get one, you can buy one from us, as loads of people have done already, and you can be part of the family and have your own long ball football shirt. We should also say that we are doing a giveaway for one of the shirts. And the entry is very simple. It's a giveaway for all of the Long Ball Football socios. So if you want to be eligible for the giveaway to win a shirt, then all you have to do is sign up to become a Long Ball Football socio. Link to that is in the description. It's our £1 a month Patreon that gets you all sorts of benefits, like a weekly predictions league and monthly watch alongs and bonus podcasts every single week, as well as entering into the giveaway. So quite a lot of information. But yeah, we're so proud of this kit. Definitely have a look at it, check it out, let us know what you think. And if you want to get one, you're more than welcome to do so. We'll put a link into the description of this podcast as well. But should we get stuck into the football, Barney? Because as we alluded to, there's an awful lot to talk about. I think this weekend reminded me why we do this podcast, why we cover Portugal, and why the Premier League is the best league in the world. We were reminded of that in the most typical way possible, with a managerial sacking after just one game, as Daniel Sousa was relieved of his managerial duties at Braga after a run 1-1 draw with Estrela da Amadora. It was their second consecutive draw after drawing the first home leg of their Europa League second round qualifier with Servette of Switzerland. They drew that 0-0, and that followed two wins over Maccabi Petach Tikva of Israel in the first round of the Europa League qualifying. They won that 7-0 in aggregate. So his record after four official games in charge was two wins, two draws, zero losses, eight goals scored, one conceded. It's one of the quickest managerial sackings we've ever seen in Portugal. And to be honest, one of the most bizarre. Let's not forget that Daniel Sousa was appointed as a new Braga manager months before last season ended. He was clearly a manager that Braga coveted and put a lot of effort into bringing in. They gave him the full pre-season. They gave him multiple signings and he delivered in those early Europa League games. And I think the sacking came as a total shock to absolutely everyone. Obviously, it's quite hard for us to discuss, Barney, because clearly something has to have happened behind the scenes, because those results that I read out after just four games surely do not warrant a sacking in any way, shape, or form. It has to have been something behind the scenes. Maybe a disagreement between the manager and the owner. Who knows? Braga themselves haven't released any more details. So we're in the dark, but I think it's fair to say that everyone was completely shocked by this.
Yeah, so surprised, but particularly because it felt like it was a project, right? Like just getting Sousa in to sort of rebrand them after Arthur George had sort of not really given them a distinct style and they were suffering defensively. And so yeah, this was really exciting. The Sousa's appointment was really promising, particularly the football he had brought to Arouca. Maybe we'd be speculating a bit to sort of try and work out exactly why it happened. It was quite interesting that Carlos Carvajal has been announced so soon after, which makes me think that was potentially in the pipeline. Trying to look at the sort of players that have come in, what players would be given different opportunities, whether there's a sort of disagreement between the manager and the board in terms of, you know, players used. There's the Polish left back Wodarek, who was quite an interesting. Robson Bambi wasn't in the squad, but Wodarek hasn't featured, and I don't know. Like I'm saying, I'm clutched at straws here to really try and find.
we're trying to think of anything.
Well, that's it, isn't it? And it's, I've, maybe there's a lot of been put on the draw with Sivet. Because it's still quite in the balance, and they were sort of, it was that home game, the first leg. So it's like the pressure of them qualifying for the Europa League is quite big, I would imagine, in terms of finances. I don't know, Albert, there seems to be weird things going on. The whole Simon Banza thing sticks out to me as well. Like, you know, it seems like he's angling to get away, but they're not sort of, I haven't seen any concrete offers or any concrete rumours of that really of note. So,
and he's not featured in any match day squads so far.
Yeah, I mean, he came on at the end of this game against Estrella. So maybe that was the reason. I don't know. it's really bizarre. I'm quite sad, to be honest, because Daniel Sousa is such a promising young manager. I think he showed his capabilities at Arouca. I think he could have brought that to most teams in this league, and I think Braga included. You know, look at the players that he could improve, the football that they could be playing. Yeah, it's the bizarreness of Portuguese football, isn't it? And we shared with each other an article today by João Pinto on his Substack about sort of the whole concept of projects in Portugal and sort of comparing the carousel of managers and how quite often it's quite hard to build anything really by the amount of managerial turnaround in this league. And, you know, Sue is a prime example of that, someone who probably should have been given a bit of time, and the, you know, what he could have got out of this Braga team could have been really something. But unfortunately, yeah, it hasn't worked out. I don't know, but it's a real mystery. It's a real shock to the system. I'm really gutted, to be honest. But I also feel like potentially Carlos Carvajal coming back is a good thing for Braga as well. It's not a negative. But I feel like Sousa could probably have bought more if he was given more time.
I think that's the big thing, isn't it? Because we were so excited about the prospect of Daniel Sousa managing Braga. You know, he had such success at Arouca and was so highly regarded. This felt like the perfect next step. And I think maybe that's on us as well, that we just kind of assumed that this would be a success from the start. I mean, the one thing that we do also have to be honest about was the fact that I don't think the performances were perfect in those four games that we saw. I mean, I even think back to perhaps the first leg of that first game against that Israeli team in the Europa League qualified. They did end up winning 2-0, but they just kind of struggled and they looked a little bit disjointed. Although they did obviously get the win over the line against, to be fair, a very weak opposition. When the second leg 5-0 and you think, right, whatever way. Then you get the first leg against Servette and it's that same thing, that little bit disjointed, perhaps not quite clicking, and against a higher quality opposition, they don't get the 2 goals and it ends 0-0. And I think even in this game against Estrella, we saw where it wasn't quite perfect. It wasn't clicking. I mean, defensively, they weren't amazing, but I think the defensive issues were there long before Souza arrived. And I think one thing that I said to Dave Pereira, for anybody who listened to our preview show all about Braga, the one thing I said to Dave was that, in fairness, Daniel Souza is not a manager you bring in to shore up a defence. You know, he's a manager you bring in to get exciting attacking football, which is what he did with Arouca. And even going forward, there were examples of that not quite clicking. I think some of the strikers struggled to bed in. So I don't want to paint a picture of this as being, you know, this perfect young manager coming in and hitting the ground running and then getting the job unfairly taken away from him. It wasn't perfect, but it was only 4 games. And I don't think anyone was under any impression that he had done anything to warrant being sacked in terms of performances on the pitch. I mean, all that I had in the back of my mind was, okay, maybe this is going to take longer than we thought to kind of get going and for him to get the performances out of this team that we hoped. The fact that he hasn't been given that time is the biggest surprise, and that's what leads me to think surely something behind the scenes has happened to warrant this decision that we may never know. Maybe it will come out. Who knows?
It could just be that Antonio Salvador just loves Carlos Carvalho
Well,
that
do you know
much.
what? This is a genuine suggestion that I have seen that because obviously when they appointed Daniel Souza, Carlos Carvalho was the manager of Olympiacos. He was then subsequently sacked later, became available as a manager, and maybe they thought, well, this was the guy we wanted all along. And one of the most bizarre aspects of this whole thing, Daniel Souza is sacked hours after his game, I believe on Sunday, right, on Sunday evening, and he's sacked the same
Straight after
evening.
the game, yeah.
Carlos Carvajal is taking training on Monday afternoon. That's how quickly they moved. And I know, to be fair, Carlos Carvajal does live in Braga. That's like his home. He does live there anyway. So he was, you know, within the vicinity of the training ground. But still, it all happened very quickly. And it does make me speculate about perhaps whether it was something that Antonio Salvador wanted to do. But, you know, that goes back to what I was saying earlier. That does surprise me, considering they did make a concerted effort to bring Souza in the first place, including appointing him before the season even ended. So, well, look, I think possibly that's enough on the managerial situation because, you know, we don't know any details, but it was an incredibly bizarre situation. Like I said, Barney, though, on the actual game itself, it was an example of Braga not at their best. We have seen that in patches throughout all their games where they've not 100% clicked, they've not 100% had that fluidity going forward. You know, when I think of what I expected from Daniel Souza, I think back to those Arouca games. Like, for me, the pinnacle of Daniel Souza's career was Arouca beating Porto at home, playing that attacking football where they got forward so relentlessly, brave, quick build up going forward. You know, we saw Braga trying that a little bit, but players not quite clicking. And Estrella themselves obviously responded to that well. They soaked up the pressure in the first half. They conceded a goal, which perhaps they would have been disappointed with defensively. But then they grew into the game themselves in the second half and did exactly the same thing to Braga at the end of the second half, where they just got a little bit lucky with some poor defending and capitalized on it.
Yeah, it's hard to really sort of dig into details now, knowing that the manager is the new manager's in. But I think, yeah, I think there are still the defensive frailties. That would be an issue that Carlos Carvalho has to sort out quickly. Although there's rumours of Niakate potentially leaving, although Ari Mbe had a good game and looked comfortable. Yeah, for me, there's also questions of the sort of the wide players as well. I wonder. You know, Roger started on this out wide in this one. Ricardo Horta on the other wing. Zaza sort of found himself out wide a few times. I feel like instinctively Horta's better closer to the box, and I imagine Carvalho will do that. Made that change as well. Wazini as well, the Moroccan striker, the new striker. He looked all right as well. So that, you know, they've improved in some areas, but I think we'll certainly be looking at the defense going forward, and whether they can be stronger there. And also Estrella, I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, we've been obviously excited by all the incomings, Lewis Nani, Lucas, sorry, Lewis Nani, Alan Ruiz, Ferro as well, but none of them started, but they still did had a decent game in the second half. Reminder of Kikus as a decent striker in this league. I like him, and of course Rodrigo Pinho as well, up front for them. So I don't know, there's players in that squad for Australia that there's a bit of talk actually about them sort of maybe perhaps being a surprise. Felipe Martins is coming in as manager as well. That is exciting. So yeah, this is yeah, this I think it's a good quite an exciting time for Australia. This is a decent point for them.
Very good point. I think I'll reserve my judgment on Australia for a little bit. I do definitely think that they've got an opportunity to do a bit better than they did last season. Obviously, they were basically in the relegation battle last season, which was kind of understandable. They did still have some good players, and maybe you could expect it a bit more, but it was quite a weak squad. So, but I agree. I really like the manager, and yeah, there is a possibility to do better. Obviously, the most exciting moment of the game, Barney, when Lewis Nani puts the ball in the back of the net, and we're waiting for the celebration. But the referee blows a whistle before he can get to his flipping. It was unfortunately offside. I thought that was a real shame because that would have been an amazing moment. And I think the thing with Nani for me, Barney, is I'm just intrigued to see what level he can actually play at because I haven't watched him play football in a long time. And I know he's been playing at a pretty low level for the last few years and only contributing little bits here and there. So I think there was always that wonder what he's going to contribute, but he came on against Braga, a good team, and he got himself into a goal scoring position and put the ball away. So it does look like he's going to be able to contribute. And of course, I think his experience will be the most valuable thing that he can offer this team.
Like he's not coming in to be their star man who they pinned all their hopes on. I think they've this window for Australia, they've really, they've brought in some good quality players, to add to them, because they had a few youngsters and a few decent players. But so like, yeah, I think it's just going to sort of flesh out the team. And Alan Ruiz as well. I think, last time he was in the lead for Arouca, he had moments and sort of in that attacking midfield role, number 10 role, where he really stood out. I mean, to be fair, the best player for Australia this game was Danilo Vega, a young right back who previously been at Gil Vicente and came through Porto's youth ranks, but been on loan to sorry, had moved to Croatia, but coming back to Australia this season. Only 21 years old, did quite well at right back, I thought, and up against Roger and Marin as well. So yeah, I think he could be a young player in that squad to keep an eye on. But I mean, on a personal level, I'm just so excited to have Lewis Nani in this league and
I
to be able to
know, I
talk
know.
about and just, like I said, even if it's just like moments of magic, even if it's just coming on for 20 minutes or so, but
Yeah.
like, being able to change a few things, that's so, I can't believe it really.
I know. And when he almost scored, I just thought, oh, it's perfect. It's the fairy tale. But sadly wasn't to be, but we'll see. Hopefully he'll get that moment in a few weeks. So yeah, very different perspectives for each of those teams. Australia very happy with a good point. And of course, very tumultuous start to the season for Braga. And let's not forget they've got that all-important second leg against Servette on Thursday. So let's hope that Carvajal can come in and steady the ship in time for that. Because I think it would be a real shame if they dropped out of the Europa League because of all of this going on. Well, look, let's talk about more drama, Barney, because it doesn't stop there. As Benfica dutifully stepped up to provide more than enough drama for one weekend of the whole Primeira Liga, as they lost 2-0 to Famalicão away on the first game of the season. Perfect for this podcast in terms of content, terrible for the fans because, listen, the fan base was already on edge, given the poor end to last season. There was that opposition to the manager, which kind of went away as the summer went on, but has been bubbling under the surface. All of that discontent came to a head again after their second consecutive season where Benfica have lost on the opening day against a smaller team, obviously lost against Boavista last season, 3-2, first day of the season. For Famalicão, though, Barney, this is a huge start to the season for them. And obviously, it's been overlooked in terms of how poor Benfica were. But listen, my takeaway from this game was that Famalicão played exceptionally. And I was looking at some of their players thinking, I'm really excited about some of these players that Famalicão have got. I really like the manager. I'll let you come in on that, though, because I'm sure you are as well. But just, yeah, I don't know what you took from this game. But for me, it was kind of obviously from Bibica's perspective, frustrating, but I just thought it was a brilliant start for Famalicão.
Well, it's just contrasting stories, isn't it, really? I think I look back to the end of last season where Famalicão won 2-0 as well against Benfica, and Evangelista was manager then. But a different game because they had Cadiz up front leading the line rather than Oscar Aranda in this game, and different squads, different teams. And I think the game played out differently in that game. But in this game particularly, I was just impressed of so many things. I think firstly, if you look at the defense, very, very solid. Even when Benfica sort of came back in the second half, they really weathered the storm. I always feel like we're talking about the next promising centre back from Famalicão. Mihaj, who's been there a while, the Albanian centre back, had a good game. And De Haas was a signing from last season who worked his way into the team after Otavio left for Porto. Both solid centre backs. And then you look at the midfielders in front of them, Topic and Youssef, who are so good at protecting that back line. But
Topic's an underrated player, I think, as well.
Oh yeah, so tidy. And both, if we want to talk about underrated players, Youssef is
I don't know about you, but I feel like he could play for any of the top three clubs for me.
Easy. Yeah. And it's a miracle.
I know Dave Pereira, I chatted to one of them at Braga. I saw him as a real Ali Amazrati replacement at Braga.
Completely. And I think what he has that perhaps Maserati doesn't is that ability to get forward as well, to get the team up and drive and carry. I really like that. And to be honest, I was, that's someone Benfica seems to be missing, a player in their midfield to do that in this game. But yeah, the final player I really wanted to praise out was Oscar Aranda, who was playing as the striker in the absence of Cadiz. Did Cadiz leave for the same club as Paulinho's left for in Mexico, I think?
I'm not sure. He's playing in Mexico, but I'm not sure exactly which
but,
club.
But, if we're thinking about it from Famalicão's point of view, a really important player for them last season. He got some big goals and secured some wins for them. So that he seemed, instinctively, that seems like a huge loss. But Oscar Aranda, I don't even remember. First day of the season last year, he had a great game then as well. I think he completed the most amount of dribbles in a single game. It was like broke records. But he was playing on the wing, right? Like this young Spanish winger who I think came through Real Madrid's academy, but suddenly found himself at Famalicão. And he was in this game, is brilliant leading the line, like a really different option for them. Just a completely different. It just added a new dynamic to that attack. And, with Gustavo Sarr behind and Cerezo as well. I think he's a Brazilian winger. He looked good. But the point I'm trying to make up is that Evangelista just came to this game different from the last time they beat Benfica last season. Just a bit more fluid. They played so well. Defense, they could soak up the pressure when they needed to. It was just so impressive.
Yeah, and I think we have to apologize to the listeners because we at one point we were planning to do a preview show which would have included sort of running through the signings from clubs like Leeds. We didn't get an opportunity to do that, but I think Famalicão, had we done that, would have been one of the clubs that we talked about with a lot of optimism, because I think after a few years of being a little bit kind of a little bit disjointed, not quite at their best, let's not forget Famalicão in terms of the context of the Primeira Liga, one of the clubs with the most resources. They've certainly got more budget than most clubs outside of the traditional top five, so they have the ability to bring in good players, but they've just not quite been the club that we saw where, when they nearly qualified for Europe with Pedro Gonçalves in the side and all of that. So I think they're close to getting back to that. I think when you look at some of the players in this team and in the starting 11, I think they have a lot of quality that perhaps people aren't appreciating, like the likes of Zaidu Youssef, who, like we said, one of the most underrated players in the league and a very good midfielder. But they also have, some experience. Rashinha at Famalicão, that's a really good player who did well for Sporting. He's played for some clubs in Portugal and done well. Gil Dias is back at the club, Barney. He went from Famalicão to Benfica and now he's back. Gustavo Sarr, the young attacking midfielder, didn't leave in the summer, could have got a big move away, but didn't. And I think he will continue to improve. Cerezo, the winger that you mentioned, he kind of joined in January and he showed some promising signs, scored. I think he scored one of the goal of the season contenders last season, and he looks like he's ready to kick on. Aranda, that you mentioned, still got Francisco Moura at left back, he's a very good player.
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper, Luis Junior, still there, a really, really quality goalie. So there's multiple players in this squad and in the starting 11 that have, in my opinion, a lot of quality. A very good manager in Armando Evangelista, who, let's not forget, is the man that got Arouca to Europe, something that Daniel Souza couldn't do, but Evangelista did it, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. And I think they played exceptionally in this game. Two excellent goals, especially the first goal, Barney. Often in these types of games, when a bigger team is beaten by a smaller team, you look at the goals and you're trying to look for where have the bigger team slipped up, what mistakes have they made, especially the first goal that Famalicão scored. I think that's a goal that Benfica would have conceded against any of the top teams in the world. It was a fantastic ball through, and Cerezo does really well to finish. So really excellent from Famalicão's point of view. Fairy tale start to the season. They deserve a lot of credit for that win. Obviously, Benfica, complete opposite end of the spectrum. It's a real discontent in the fan base. A lot of people think that the performance was unacceptable. I watched Roger Schmidt's interview post game, and I thought his assessment was pretty interesting. I don't know if you heard this, Barney. I'll read out what he said. He said, "We were really well prepared before the game and the players were very motivated. I was convinced we were going to play a good game, but on the pitch, we couldn't put into practice what we did all pre-season. The power was not there. We weren't winning duels. We weren't winning second balls. The opponent was very compact, very good on the transition, and they did that very well. It seems like they were much fresher than us. To be honest, I have no explanation for today's performance." I think that's, pretty honest assessment of the game. I do agree with him. I think, Famalicão just looked brighter and Benfica just looked second best. They looked slightly off the pace. And I think that is worrying because, they haven't had exactly many players on international duty. They haven't had European qualifiers to contend for. So they should have been ready to start the season, hit the ground running, but it was far from that.
That just feels like he's trying to almost put the blame on the players, right? Like the fact that the effort wasn't there, which I just can't get behind. I just feel like they're in the, it just feels like they're in the exact same place as how they ended the season, right? And they've had so much time for him to change, and he hasn't. I mean, they've signed a left a starting left back, so where can you move Alzenis to left wing, like, and that's gonna be his, like, probably his
Honestly.
biggest conundrum this season for Schmidt is, with Di Maria coming back, you have two decent left backs in the book now. Yeah, how are João Mário and Arsas both gonna play left midfield? Like, where? Like, I think because the thing that was evident, and which had been ever so evident last season, is if Schmidt playing this way, they just lacked with people to make things happen, right? There's no pace out wide. Neither fullback was sort of making any width of note, or no creativity in the middle. And instinctively, I feel that's where Kostić should be playing to sort out that problem. But maybe I have to accept that that's not going to happen under Roger Schmidt. Like, he just seems to refuse to do it. And I saw a picture of on Twitter of this picture of Rafa, João Neves, and David Neres, who's about to leave, right? And he. And those who they those are the players that they've lost, essentially. And although Neres has sort of came in and out of the team, the other two players, and Rafa and João Neves, basically played every game last season, right? So Schmidt just seems to want to be a, wants to replicate Rafa through the middle. So that's why Prestani got the start, the young Argentinian winger, in that sort of number 10 role playing. And that's also why we've seen Marcos Leonardo play there a few times in pre-season as well. Like, he's really trying to replicate that fast pace person behind the striker who can get in the box. But then you lose that creativity, right? And then if you look at João Neves as well, the what they've lost in him, like, obviously a unique profile player, played a, and he did play different roles depending on who he was partnered with in the midfield. But perhaps most importantly was his dynamism and sort of the pace of play that he brought, and which I let's say a natural positivity. They brought in Barreiro, the Luxembourg midfielder, who isn't a perfect match, but he does have that energy. But there's still, I think the point I'm trying to make out of it is that he seems to really have such a set idea of what each role in his team needs to do, that he's trying to get players to do things that they're not naturally good at. Like, I think Prestani's a prime example, right? Because so he had a good pre-season, had some moments of brilliance, right? He's clearly an incredibly skillful player. But if you look at the story of this match, was that he comes off at half time with one of the lowest ranked one of the lowest ranked players according to Goal Point, for his overall rating. He's replaced by Kotchu, which is what I was saying, what I sort of wanted, who then finishes the game as one of the lowest ranked players as well. I think the point I'm trying to make, Albert, is it just seems like Schmidt is just, it's like it just can't change. And I just always feels like there's players not playing in the right place, being asked to do things they're not naturally good at, and it's just making these players worse. And it's infuriating. I feel like I've become a Benfica fan because it's just infuriating, like seeing this, and then hearing post-match just sort of say, I don't know, you didn't have no clue what happened. Like, you got outmanaged and you didn't change anything. You just put players in the change the player but ask them to do the same thing. It's just, I don't know. I like I said, I was I had like an hour's wait in a hospital waiting room, and I was just started writing notes, and this just sort of came out.
You make a great point. Barney, what if I said to you that Benfica potentially had a new manager lined up? And what if I said to you that that manager was ready to come in, shake things up, stamp his authority on the team, and make himself a Benfica hero? And what if I told you that manager was Sergio Conceição? I mean, come on, that would be absolute box office.
Some of the pictures I've seen, like the mock-ups of him, it just this always took me, like it's almost caught me a few times.
Don't know where this has come from. Some people are saying he's conscious how himself has told the press that he'd take the job. I can't believe it. It would just be insanity. And then, of
He
course,
hasn't got another
there is a
chance.
serious point to this, which is that Benfica came out and had to make a statement saying that it's completely false that they're looking for a new manager. They're not looking for a new manager. XYZ. But I mean, that would be insane.
Yeah. It would be insane, but no, I think the manager talk is interesting because, like, he was sort of backed at the end of last season, and then to start like this, it's really not great, and it's just gonna things are just yeah, it just feels like we're literally back at how we ended last season, which shouldn't happen when you've had a whole preseason and players come in like you mentioned, they've sorted out the striker position, and is it Pavlidis didn't really have the greatest game, but that was an area that needed to address. They've shipped out Tang, so they're trying to ship out Cabral. But it does feel, I feel like Neres would be a huge loss, but that's obviously
I
down
agree.
the relationship between him and Roger Schmidt, which is broken down. I feel like the point I was trying to make out, and I did rant a bit, but like, and I know Cristiano had a good preseason in that role, but I also can't help think, but like, Kotchu, I see Kotchu going on a similar path to Darren Neres, just trying to get out of that team. But Kotchu could, everything was there for Kotchu. Like, he was rumored with Liverpool. Like, his performance in Holland, like, he has everything to make that step up to like a Liverpool potentially. But he chose Benfica as that route. I think, I made the point about those two players, Preciani and Kotchu, sort of getting low ratings from Goal Point. But the point I was trying to make is that, and what I think the real tragedy is that they should be playing together. Kosha should be in the middle, finding players running in behind from the wings, not having Alisson and João Mario that either side to sort of protect the counter or to press in the right way or whatever it is that Schmidt's trying to do. I think, like, I always think about like being an armchair manager, right? Because I'm not a manager, and I've all of the blah, blah, blah. But we do see managers change things, right, and adapt. We have seen managers evolve, and like for me, the best part of football is risk, right? And I think most fans like that little bit of risk, and it does feel like teams are getting better at defending, like in general and across the whole football. You're having to be more creative to break teams down, right? Generate transitions, etc. Get better at set pieces, all these things that we see teams in the Premier League doing, etc. And I do think that's right for Portugal as well. I do think we're seeing teams get better at defending, and the bigger teams are struggling when they like to break things down. So what have you got to do? You've got to get more creative players, and you've got to have fast-paced players like Neres who can take a man on the two. And it just seems like Schmidt is just so focused on his control and having a system and having players do the right thing in the right moment. That's why he trusts players like Alves and João Mario to play on the wing. And I just feel like it's not going to work for them. I feel exhausted already talking about Benfica, and it's like week one, right? And people are probably bored of me listening to me talking about that as well. But I just think that's just, it's It feels like a travesty, man. Like, because there's so much talent in that squad, and to see, I'm gutted to see Darwin Erez leave. If I'm honest, like, if he leaves this league, like, because he, I feel like he had so much to offer, such a like exciting young player, and to see him, like, yeah, just leave the way he's gonna leave is so sad. But yeah.
I agree. I think that would be a big mistake. But a lot for Benfica to do in the next few games if they're gonna improve, and if Roger Schmidt is gonna prove that he's still the man to be Benfica manager. So a team to keep an eye on in the coming weeks for sure. That's a lot of underachievement, a lot of negativity. So let's talk about some more positive results. Well, from the winning team's perspective, of course, and talk about Porto, Barney, who beat Gil Vicente 3-0 at home. It was another opportunity to look at Porto under Vitor Bruno after their excellent win in the Supertazer against Sporting. And I have to say, Barney, I think it was another excellent display from Vitor Bruno's side. A lot was made of them not making any signings in the summer window. And I think there was a lot of people wondering how different they would look, considering that their new manager was the former manager's assistant. But I think Vitor Bruno has done a lot to change the way Porto are playing. He certainly put out a different lineup with lots of different players in different positions. He obviously started with Dani Lamasso out front. He started Nico Gonzalez in attacking midfield. He had Jaime and Borges on the wings. He had Wanderson Galeno at left back. I mean, Sergio Conceição would have loved that. So there was plenty of variation, and it definitely paid off with a very good performance, 3 goals. Gil Vicente didn't have a sniff all game, if we're being totally honest. Obviously, 2 penalties kind of helped the scoreline on a little bit, but I have to say, I think it was a very deserved victory, and once again, another good performance.
Yeah, we're seeing a huge difference between Costa and Conceição, like, which is so refreshing. I mean, and the team he put out for this game, I think, shows like a few key examples of that. You know, firstly, he rewards players for good performances. I think Ivan Jamie coming into the team for his performance in the cup, you know, getting that start and being able to affect the game the way he did, and this one was good. Vitor Bruno is also happy to change the team for the opponent in front of him. You know, he could afford to play with one less defender, stick Galeno at left back for this Gil, against the Gil Vicente team, and that works really well. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, he fancies Nemasio, which we've been waiting for years for. I'm so happy because I know it's a little thing, but the fact Nemasio was on pens as well, that just, you know, that's.
Well, he took a second pen, and I think actually that was kind of given to him, you
Oh well, maybe that's weakening the point I'm trying to make.
know.
No, I think that he's trusted him with a few starts and a few appearances, and getting the start in this game. I know there's rumors of Evan Nilsson departing, but you know, Tony Martinez was the sort of second striker for a
And he's
little
still got
while.
Fran Navarro on the bench, so there's still other choices he can
Well,
make.
that was the thing I was going to say, because Fran Navarro, when he came on in against Sporting, looked really good. So, you know, I was really pleased to see Dani Massa get a start. I think he's obviously a completely different striker to some of the other players in that team. Like, he gets involved in the attack more, you know, it brings players in a lot more. So I quite like that, particularly with the amount of attacking players they had on the pitch, you know, Gonzalez and Borges as well, with Galeno coming out wide as well. It was nice. It was different. It was a different Porto, and it's yeah, I'm quite excited for them actually this season.
Yeah, I think it is also worth talking about the way that Vitor Bruno is playing Dani Lamasso, because he, for me, I don't think of Dani Lamasso as a lone striker. I don't think that's what his best skill set is, leading the line. I think he works best either behind a striker or alongside another striker. But I think Vitor Bruno is using him in a way that he knows that he's a more mobile player, and he's got the energy and the mobility to press teams. And I think that's how Vitor Bruno wants to play, especially when they're playing against weaker teams. He wants to press from the front. And I think Dani Lamasso does that well. And I think to get the goal from, even though it's a penalty, is brilliant for Dani Lamasso's confidence and to get his season up and running. But I think it's the thing that we're seeing, which is so encouraging, is the getting the best out of players that have been forgotten about a bit. I mean, Even Jaime looks unrecognizable. He just looks like he's ready to have such a big season. I think he already looks more than good enough to start for Porto, and I think he's going to improve so much. He still has so much confidence to build, and he still has so much more experience to gain. And that's such a positive thing to have for Porto. And I think it's funny because, you know, we talk about them not making any signings. I still think they need one or two. I don't actually think they need that many if this is the kind of quality that they're getting out of what they got. And that's even without the likes of players like Evan Nilsson and Francisco Conceição, who, you know, some people are saying maybe they're slightly injured, some people are saying maybe they're on the way out. Who knows where they'll be come the end of the window? But they don't have those players to rely on at this moment in time, and they're still playing very well, creating a lot of chances, and Fran Navarro coming off the bench, I thought was excellent. Pepe as well, another player on the bench, you know, and we know how much quality he's got. So I think it is very positive signs for Porto. We've seen them tested against a good club like Sporting, and they passed that test. We've seen them tested against weaker opposition as Gil Vicente, and they passed that test with flying colours. Like I said, it was completely dominant. I don't know if you've even got anything to add on Gil Vicente, because for me, the only thing I took from this game was that they were very, very well beaten. They couldn't deal with the amount of attacking players that Porto had on the pitch. I mean, we say Galeno playing at left back, he was basically just an extra winger, you know, the amount of time he spent in the box. And I think that wealth of attacking talent just completely occupied Gil Vicente from minute one to minute 90. They couldn't get out of their own half, they couldn't create their own chances. And it was, you know, that's what happens when you play a good team playing good football.
Well, am I right in thinking that Gil Vicente were the first team to sack their manager the season before?
Well, this is actually a very good point, of course. So, yeah, that is another interesting aspect to this game, which is that it was Tozé Mareko who was in charge, and he was officially the first manager to leave. But I think his was more of a resignation, not a sacking. But yeah, he was the first managerial change of the season before a game had even been played. They're bringing in Bruno Pinheiro. Barney listeners might remember him as manager of Estoril not long ago, but he wasn't in charge in time for this game. So yeah, it was a very difficult situation for them.
Yeah, I haven't got much on them. Like they feel like last season they really flirted with being in danger. They could never really sort of. It just feels like they've lost their. They haven't been able to get back to where they were a few seasons ago. And defensively, they're very weak. They lost Gabriel Pereira, the sort of star centre back. To he's moved to FC Copenhagen. So they're still going with 38-year-old Ruben Fernandes, the captain at centre back. But he's all right. But that was a that's certainly an area they need to hopefully strengthen in, and they haven't yet. Midfield as well, they've brought in a few players. There's still quality in that midfield. Fujimoto and Maxime Dominguez, listeners will know I'm big fans of. The best of them needs to be brought out by Bruno Pinheiro, and they've managed to keep Felix Correa as well, who was probably their key player last year, the winger. They've brought him in from Juventus, so he'll be key for them. So it'll be, I do worry a little bit for them because I think their squad is quite thin and weak. But with Bruno Pinheiro coming in, that's something to be excited by. And he needs to sort of make his mark as soon as possible, really, because it could get if they get left behind quite soon, I do worry for them a little bit.
Yeah, that's the phrase that I would use about. They are in danger of getting left behind. Perhaps, you know, we've seen how easy it is for a club to go from mid-table into the relegation battle. It can happen very, very easily. All right, well, let's quickly talk about Sporting, who got the defence of their title up to the ideal start. The first game of the season, Friday night, they beat Rio Ave 3-1 at home. Victor Jokeres with one, and Pedro Gonçalves with two goals, getting back to where they left off last season, those two key players. Very positive performance from Sporting, I thought. Bounced back from the Supertassa very well, dominated the game, created loads of chances, played exciting football. Obviously disappointed to concede, but I think it did end up being a pretty good goal from Rio Ave, so I don't think there's too much shame in that. In many ways, for me, Barney, it felt like business as usual. It was just a lot of familiar faces, a lot of familiar football, and it was very pleasing in a way to see that Sporting have, they still got it.
Did you see just sorry on Rio Ave's goal? Did you see the video of Heuermann on the bench reacting to it? He was
No.
absolutely furious. I know you said it was a good goal. It was a lovely play from Clayton, and but I think, but I guess Heuermann's sort of showing the sort of standards that they're trying to set themselves this season. I thought, I have certain to be honest with you, I had sort of forgotten about Pedro Gonçalves, and I feel like he just hasn't been in my head at all preseason. I've just been thinking about they've kept Gyökeres. Trincão had a good season last year. Jonny Katma was like Pedro Gonçalves didn't come into my head, and I feel like he's gonna get really sky high numbers again. He'll probably be the best. I've got a feeling he'll be the best player in the league this season. I feel like he's gonna come on that step. For some reason, well, the fact that he's taken a number eight shirt really sort of. It didn't quite sit well with me because I don't think he's a number eight, but like it also does sit quite well with me because I think that's quite, I don't know, who's the last person to wear the number eight for Sporting, Bruno Fernandes. So like I think he, that it fit that feels significant to me. I think Gyökeres has had a great game as well, looked lively, and I really like the wide players for Sporting. But Casemiro going over to the left hand side. Quenda on the right hand side had an excellent game. Like, let's not forget his age. Was he just 17, just turned 18, or is he? Yeah. So, like, yeah, huge. Diamande in the middle where Kouyaté would have been, it looks perfect. Like, that, I think, in that central position could be the sort of making of him this season, the sort of the way he has to lead that back line, but also like his passing, the way he carried it out. I love Kresma as well. Every time he plays in that right centre back, it's like, yeah, I think you put it perfectly out, but it just looks like business as usual. I'm probably it's the wide players I'm most excited for. Quenda looks really bright.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it was so many of the same lineup. Only two new faces in this lineup: Barney, the goalkeeper, obviously, and Kenda, who started on the right hand side. 17 years old. He just looks absolutely fantastic. So exciting. He had an incredible pass for the first goal. It wasn't the assist, but it was the through ball through to Victor Gyökeres that he then. Gave a little tap into Pedro Gonçalves. It was, the quality that he has at his age is really, really impressive. And I'm really excited to see what level he gets to this season. He took Jenny Katamo's spot, and then Katamo played on the left-hand side and took the Nuno Sanchez spot. So it's good for them to have more options on those sides, because it was very much the Katamo and Nuno Sanchez show last season. They were the kind of only real players that made an impact on those positions, but good to have another option.
I think what's really interesting on those specific positions, right, is that in the league, I think Amrin's going to be able to afford to play those less defensively sound players there, right? I think that when it comes to the champ, because the back three are so good, but when it comes to the Champions League, what he does then and who he decides to play, because that would obviously be a different, complete different game then. To move on to Rio Ave, I think. Because I saw people sort of coming down quite heavy on them after this game, and I did, essentially they were let down by sort of two big mistakes, I would say. And because we have seen Luis Freire manage games against the big teams well in the past, they had a few bright moments. I thought Oli Pohlmann, the German midfielder they signed from Dortmund, who was he? What was in his shirt again? Was it Paul
Olinho
Olinho, which a lot
or something.
I love. But he could be a standout player from the season. And Brandon Aguilera as well, the Costa Rican one who just come on from Forest, when he came on, he looked bright as well. But I think what's interesting about those two players is that they probably don't come to Rio Ave without the multi-club link with Forest and Olympiacos, right? And maybe this is slightly big picture, Albert, but I find it quite interesting. I was reading a thread by journalist Luis Cristavo from Portugal, who interviewed the Rio Ave president, Alexandrina Cruz, who credits Rio Ave's survival to this 80% purchase by Evangelos Maranakis, who also owns Forest and Olympiacos. But what I think is interesting, and probably more so recently, seeing what's happened with Bordeaux, and we've seen Boavista struggle with that link. In France, we've seen clubs like Troyes, part of the City Group, relegated. But the point I'm trying to make, Albert, is it actually looks like it's working in Real's favour right now, because the players they've been able to bring in has certainly improved them. I think Panza as well, the centre back from Forest, will do well in Portugal. And probably the most important thing for their success this year is Luis Freire remaining with them. And we're of the understanding midway through last season that it would be his last season. However, he renews, and in an interview at the end of the season, he said the main reason for renewing with them is because of the ambition. And to be real, he's probably been shown a path to potentially managing Olympiacos or Forest further down the line, who's and have a squad who realistically could probably push for Europe this season. So I think I guess to bring it back to this game, I saw people criticizing Luis Freire, and we did see bits of where I agree. I think that the high line leading to that first goal, you mentioned that pass from Quenda, but Rio were basically on the halfway line at that point. So, and the building up from the back leading to mistakes. Yeah, I think Freire said at the end of the game that Sporting had found their rhythm already, and I guess with the amount of changes that Rio have gone through, maybe it would take them a bit of time to find their rhythm. But I think so, I'm just trying to sort of fight a corner for Luis Freire, because I think and Rio Ave, because I think it's an interesting situation, and sometimes we're quite critical and rightly so of multi-club ownership, but I think in this set case it's worked well for Rio Ave, and it might actually do him quite well this season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, we won't judge Rio Ave on this game. They'll be judged on many, many other games in the season, not first game of the season against Sporting. And I did think that the goal that Clayton scored was excellent. I think, there were some positives, but look, I'm not really bothered about this performance, particularly from Rio Ave. I look forward to seeing them in the coming weeks against teams more on their level.
I was just going to say Clayton's a great signing, but
Excellent
coming back,
signing.
yeah, so that's another one.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we normally only focus on certain games in depth, but this week, because so much happened, we're just going to quickly run through the rest of the fixtures and keep you updated with what happened, because first week of the season, it's important to get an idea of where everyone is. Obviously, Friday night we had Sporting versus Rio Ave that we just mentioned, and then Saturday was the first opportunity that we got to see two newly promoted teams, Avs and Nacional. Ended 1-1. Nacional went 1-0 up before equaliser in the second half from Avs. So all square there. Not much to take from that game, I don't think, Barney. It was nice to see Arvin Appiah start, English winger. But I didn't particularly take too much from the game.
No, I was just going to shout out the two goal scorers, Albert. Beza for Nacional. I think he's been in Portugal before, but I think it was for Rio Ave. But he's back in the league with Nacional, and I don't know, a skillful player, but I think who lacked a bit of physicality last time I saw him. But the one I really want to shout out was the AVS scorer, Mercado, young Ecuadorian winger. I put him in my fantasy team. I was so happy to see him score. But
Here we go.
I think he scored a few bangers in the cup last season. I think one against Benfica. So left-footed, pacey, physical winger. Yeah, one to keep an eye on. I think Jean Mercado.
John Mercado, John Market, very good. We'll keep an eye on him. Also on Saturday, Barney, I cannot believe this result, because we've been talking in pre-season about Boavista, right? They've not signed any players. They're under a transfer ban. They got one of the weakest squads in the league. They haven't been able to reinforce it. They've got financial issues. They've not been playing their players. They're probably doomed for relegation this season. What do they do game week one? Obviously, they get the win 1-0 away at Casapia. They got the goal from Rosinho, a penalty, put them 1-0 up. I don't want to be dramatic about this game, Barney, but this is a poor result for Casapia. Surely they've got to be doing better in this game. I mean, come on.
I couldn't believe it. I was just, I
They
thought,
got Jose Font starting, Riley. Come on, what's happened?
yeah, I couldn't believe it. I was so surprised that Boavista were able to get a win. I thought, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? I think one little
They have a
story,
habit of starting seasons strongly, to be fair to
yeah,
Boavista.
they do. I don't know. They'll have the backs against the wall mentality. We've got no chance, but that might be good for some of those players. One little story I liked was because they're obviously going to have to use a lot of youth players this season to sort of fill out the squad, and João Barros came on for them. But there's a picture of him last day of the season last year in the crowd celebrating their survival, and then
Oh, wow.
him coming on for the pitch in this game was nice. So yeah, huge win for Boavista.
And Saturday obviously was wrapped up by Porto versus Gil Vicente. Sunday, Barney, super, super interesting game. On Sunday afternoon, Estoril played Santa Clara. Estoril, we talked about them a lot. They got the new Scottish manager, Ian Cathro. They got some interesting players. A team that we probably hoped or expected exciting things from. They played Santa Clara, newly promoted, and it was a catastrophic result for Estoril, who lost 4-1 at home on the opening day of the season to a newly promoted side. This was the biggest scoreline of the weekend. Santa Clara are currently top of the table, Same goal difference as Porto, but obviously they scored more goals, so they're currently top. It all started so well for Estoril. They went 1-0 up and then capitulated in the second half, and the game ended 4-1. Add to that the comedy value of manager Ian Cathery having to watch the game from a nearby office through a window because he doesn't have the appropriate work permits currently work in Portugal. The whole thing was a bit bizarre, but I think it was worrying Barney because Estoril, I think capitulate is the right word. They just seem to lose their heads. They let the game get away from them despite a good start, and it was a very poor defeat.
Yeah, it's always going to be hard when the manager's not allowed on the touchline. I think it's also going to be hard for him because he's sort of, I imagine he'll be seen as almost like a Graham Potter type figure, this sort of young coach with ideas. We saw he brought on is it Bruno Vitão on to play in defense, Bernardo Vitão, sorry, to play defense midfield at some point, who's arguably one of their best centre backs. So yeah, there's I don't know. I'm still excited to see what he can do. He obviously needs a bit of time to get his ideas across. Although yeah, it was quite surprising. But to be fair to Santa Clara, this does happen as well. They're promoted team. They'll be high on confidence after winning a lot of games last season. A lot of continuity in the team, which really helps. I think that left hand side. Is it Gabriel Silva who was there when they were last up? A player I remember. Catch my eye, but MT, the left wing back, I think he's going to be a real big player for them this season. Like I think when he first came to Portugal and he was playing as a left back in this system where he's sort of playing a left wing back and got more license to roam, could be very dangerous, and he had a standout game. So yeah, Santa Clara, I think a team I'm really going to enjoy watching this season. They've got a lot of they come up with a lot of promise.
I have to say, I know very, very little about them, so I also, after this performance, definitely look forward to watching their next games. Also on Sunday, Barney, another really interesting game, Farense versus Moreirense. Two teams that impressed us last season. Obviously, Moreirense finished in sixth place. They had really, really good season, lost their manager to Vitória at the end of the season and brought in César Peixoto. I think fair to say a manager with mixed fortunes so far in the Primeira Liga. I think a manager with a lot to prove. And he did prove it in this first game. They won 2-1 away at Farense. They scored the opening goal. Marrakech, I mean, the guy's becoming a bit of a Liga legend at the moment. Marrakech, he opened the scoring very early. Did seem to be falling apart. They got a player sent off and Farense equalized very soon after. But they managed to get the winner despite being a man down. Luis Azoué scored in the 79th minute. So very good goal from Moreirense. Very good win from Moreirense, excuse me. I think Moreirense it's a really interesting team to keep an eye on because they obviously achieved so much last season. They lose their manager and they bring in Peixoto. Like I said, a lot to prove. And yet they got this great result at the beginning of the season. It will be very interesting to see how they do this season compared to last year.
Yeah, what was the story of the sending off? Was it like Sydney Tavares, ex-Leicester midfielder, sort of? But he sort of was he coming off or like came up? I don't know. But I think he was trying to come off for a substitution or come back on after injury. But it looks really weird. He just got a yellow and a red straight away from the. But yeah, like it's still important for them to get the win. I mean, yeah, I mean, Assu is. Luiz Assu was a striker I criticised a lot last year because I felt like Morans weren't able to get anything from their strikers, but good for him to get a goal and get 3 points for Moreirense this game. Little shout out to Rivaldo Morais for Ferenc, a new signing from promoted from the under 23 team, who had a real standout game for this. I think it was given man of the match. So yeah, 23 years old, but has got Portuguese and sorry, Norway citizenship. So an interesting player, but just a great name and a standout performance from the young right back.
Absolutely. And there is a connection between that game, Barney, and the last game of the weekend. Obviously, Rui Borges, the manager, achieved so much at Moreirense, left to become a Arouca manager. They've got off to a good start in the Europa Conference League. They won the first round of their Europa Conference League and look on track to qualify for the group stage, which would be huge for Portugal and the Portuguese coefficient. Well, they also got off to a great start in their first league game. They beat Arouca 1-0 away from home. Wonderful support in the stands from Vitória. The manager said apparently there were 2,000 Vitória fans, which sounds pretty incredible. These two teams, Barney, Very similar in many ways. Two teams that done well last season but lost their manager, looking to continue the success under new managers this season. Obviously, in this case, Arouca weren't able to get a win. Their new manager, Gonzalo Garcia, young Spanish manager's come in. He's been given the task of taking these oddball players that they get from all parts of the world and all weird and wonderful places and building a good team. I do have to say, I thought, obviously, I think Vitória did deserve the win, but Arouca did well themselves. It wasn't a poor performance by any means. They did show attacking promise. They did show that they were capable of getting forward. Unfortunately, no shots on targets, hence why they didn't score. And I think they were perhaps a little bit disappointed not to play a little bit better. But very important win for Vitória. Incredible to see Nelson Oliveira scoring. You know, I think it's a real surprise that not only he joined Vitória, but that he's been giving the starts and he's been delivering. So really interesting game. Really enjoyed the game. And I think two teams that I'm going to really enjoy watching this season as well.
Yeah, I've got a feeling Oliveira will be quite a big feature for Vitória, and then, like you, I didn't expect him to be as important, but he's a good profile striker for the way they were playing at the moment. Mangas on the left hand side, being able to put balls in, and probably the one I'm most player I'm most excited about for Vitória is in Caio César, the Brazilian winger, left foot. I guess it's going to be Jota's heir. Yeah, really exciting winger. Arouca, yeah, the is obviously d they're doing things slightly different. He's very young midfield. Pedro Santos, who started to show good signs, the young Portuguese midfielder
Very young.
playing.
David Samuel's in the midfield, Barney. He's about 45.
Well, I was yeah, I was looking at the other one,
He
the
brings the average age up a little
yeah,
bit.
Kaichi Fuki, the Japanese midfielder who I think Koltemans had on loan from Bayern Munich last season, but he's at Arouca. I'm quite excited to see what he can do. But yeah, I think it would be when you mentioned sort of players from all over the place, Belarusian striker Morozov got on the pitch in this game. A player I didn't realize they had on their books, but I didn't see last season. But yeah, he might be filling the void that well, they brought in Henrique Araújo as well from on loan from Benfica, so they've brought two players in to sort of replace the goals from Rafa Majica, because he was a proper unique striker, you know, proper number nine, which you don't find many of these days. So yeah, I think I'm also very sorry, I to go out to Vitória, but they're looking good in Europe. I'm really hopeful, like you, that they can progress.
Yeah, I think Vitória definitely looked like the team further along in terms of their development, their progression, their cohesiveness. And I think they probably have got one or two better players. Could be an exciting season for Vitória. I think the jury's still a bit out on Arouca. But again, I look forward to watching them in the coming weeks and see how they progress. Well, look, that's it for all the Premier League of football from this weekend. Boy, is it great to be back. We loved every second of this weekend. And it doesn't stop there. Me and Barney are off to record our preview podcast, which is exclusive to Lobble Football Socios. If you want to listen to that and get our thoughts on all the upcoming football from the second week of Premier League of Football, just click the link in the description of this podcast, become a Longball Football Socio on Patreon. It's only £1 a month, and you get that bonus weekly podcast, you get the Predictions League, you get the monthly watch alongs, and you get entered into our draw to win a Longball Football shirt. But that just leaves me to say, Barney, thank you very much for listening, and see you next week.
Yes, next week.